Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. Got Rodney Shakespeare back. Lots and lots of topics to discuss. Rodney is an expert on, well, he's a distinguished writer, scholar, and lecturer. He's an expert on money and the real economy, also on social and economic justice. Rodney and I address a lot of the same issues. We exchanged a couple of emails earlier this morning, Chicago time where I am, and I mentioned Korea that we want to talk about. Also, the latest round of Iranian nuclear talks wound up in Almaty, Kazakhstan. In fact, it was the second time they took place in Almaty. Well, Almaty is a big-time location now, former Soviet republic. I checked the time differential. Almaty and Chicago made it easy for me to keep up with how the situation was progressing over there. We'll talk about that a little bit later. 11-hour difference between Almaty and Chicago. So, a couple of hours ago, I got the report that the talks wound up. Well, we'll talk about how they ended a little bit later. Rodney, before you jump on, I'll just mention a little bit about North Korea. I've written, over the past couple of weeks, three articles, I believe, on North Korea. North Korea doesn't want war. I see the prospects of war very, very slim. What could happen later? Who knows? America has a permanent war policy. I've written about it several times. I put out a new article today on it. Absolutely, the most astonishing figure I ever heard, and it's all documented. I've got it all in black and white. Every year in U.S. history, every single year since 1776, and actually before that, we'll just take it from 1776. America has been at war with one or more adversaries at home and or abroad. There hasn't been a single year of peace in America's history. Is it any wonder that America is always at war now? It especially ratcheted up after World War II. And as bad as George Bush was, Obama is worse, fighting multiple wars. He doubled down George Bush. I think he's tripled down George Bush now. So anything is possible. Does America want a war in East Asia? Sure seems hard to imagine, but you never know. Sometimes you get what you wish for. Sometimes you get what you don't wish for. Anyway, the rhetoric is harsh. North Korea calls itself in a state of war. An uneasy armistice exists from July 1953. The war in North Korea didn't begin. It was Truman's war. I've written about it. North Korea responded to repeated South Korean provocations instigated by Harry Truman. It was Truman's war. And the war never ended. You got the armistice. You got a 2.5-kilometer DMZ. You got an uneasy situation that's persisted, what, 60 years? How long is this going to go on? Does anybody want to risk a nuclear confrontation? I think North Korea probably does have nuclear weapons. I mean, if their existence is threatened, I think they'll go all out. They'll do whatever they can. Their missiles can't hit America, but they sure can hit Japan. They sure can hit South Korea. They might hit Hawaii. It's a pretty ugly situation, Rodney. Your comments?
Well, first of all, I didn't realize that every year since 1776, I was aware that the USA, and to a great extent the UK, but certainly the USA, have been involved in about 45 to 50 war situations since the end of the Second War. But one looks into these things and they get worse and worse. In respect of the Korean situation, it seems to me that you've got a sort of mindset which is America has applied to Cuba. If the USA really wanted to change Cuba as opposed to having an enemy all the time, it would just simply remove all sanctions, and I would bet you, Stephen, that there would be powerful forces in Cuba wanting to immediately shake hands with the USA and behave, as it were, almost as an American colony. I'm not sure that would be wise, but the fact of the matter is, if the USA wants to achieve its aims in Cuba, it would just simply remove sanctions. You take Iran, you can guarantee that the present behavior against Iran is simply guaranteeing that the Iranian people are never going to even conceivably think of giving up their civilian nuclear program. And if there are any divisions in the Iranian society, and I don't believe there are any serious fundamental divisions, but if there are, those divisions are completely hidden by the attitude of the USA and Israel and crew and their cronies, which is that you put sanctions against them and treat them as a pariah state. You don't. You remove the sanctions, and then let's see what happens with the effect of the internet and the rest of it. Now, look at North Korea. The USA has refused a peace treaty since 1953. The USA annually has a month-long war games, and in its last war games, they were doing everything under the sun, like nuclear attacks on North Korea. And from the point of view of North Korea, they are continually threatened. In the same way, it's not a point of view, it's a reality, and exactly the same way is that Iran, which is surrounded by 40 American bases, all with missiles on that point at Iran. And what have these countries done? Well, all that they've done is that they actually, they decided to do things in a different way. But if you want to beat them in the long run, you rely simply on a fairly free from pressure human nature, and you rely on democracy. But the USA bottles these countries up and puts those domestic populations and their governments into positions where they are not going to change, and particularly they are not going to change under force and aggressions. So there you are. The situation in the Korean Peninsula is, I believe, has been created and maintained by the USA, and it's made worse. And every now and again, internal pressures inside North Korea causes them to behave, well, on the face of it, a little irresponsibly. But they're a nation which is being bottled up, threatened, and attacked. There's not going to be an attack on North Korea simply because North Korea does possess some form of nuclear weapon. The danger is that with the rhetoric saying we're going to threaten you, we're going to send bombs to you, we're going to do this and that, when the North Korean, Stephen, they do not have the means to hit America. Of course they haven't. The danger is that some junior commander on either side could set the whole things off. I do think that the world ought to go up to the continual aggressions of America against country after country, and the secret is to let them behave and be subject to the pressures of ordinary, sane people. That's what creates the change. Aggression against them, sanctions against them, turn them into pariah states, only solidifies the support for the regimes.
Well, indeed so. Rodney. It is really a deplorable situation, and North Korea has been unfair. It's not exactly a model regime. Nobody would say that. But no. It has wanted normalized relations, Rodney, with the West for decades, at least since the 1980s, I think before that. They don't want to be in a state of war with anybody. The economy is very weak. They need something to be able to revive it and create jobs and have some kind of a normal existence and live without the sword of Damocles hanging over its head. It's been that way since since June 1950, when the Korean War began.
Yes.
And the country was literally turned to rubble. 3 or 4 million North Koreans were killed. I I'm not sure what the population was then, smaller than it is now, of course, but that kind of a loss of the numbers of people in the country, my goodness, the equivalent in America with over 300 million, I mean, it could be, maybe the population was 10 million at that time. Let's say a third of the population was wiped out. What if 100 million Americans were killed in a war? I mean, that would be a catastrophe beyond catastrophes. Well, that happened in North Korea. And before nuclear weapons existed then, they weren't used, but now they're being thrown out there, threatened the use of nuclear weapons, like they're king-size hand grenades. I mean, these things can literally annihilate humanity. You drop enough of them, and you could create nuclear winter, and nuclear winter, nuclear winter means the end of mankind, the end of humanity. That's really what it's all about.
And you're quite right. And
Rodney.
Yeah, yes, and if you look, say, at Vietnam, where the Vietnamese did actually win, okay, but here we are, the Vietnamese War is over, and Vietnam is no longer quite the pariah state that it was, because, you know, ordinary common sense and the effect of communications, etc., has moderated its behavior. But the USA seems to be a combination of rigidity and vindictiveness and complete arrogance, which leads it to stitch up countries like North Korea, which, as you point out, are essentially very tiny nations with tiny populations. And they want to get rid of the risk on the North Korean, on the Korean Peninsula. Then what they have to do is they have to do a deal. And that deal does require a peace treaty, which the USA has refused. Anyway, Stephen, I can see that maybe the North Koreans are behaving a bit badly at the moment, but there are small people threatened with their back against the wall, and that's the real problem, and the big bullies aren't giving them a chance, and the big bullies basically want to keep baiting them. They want to keep baiting them, and then the military-industrial complex can have another war, can't it? This is what the game is going on.
Well, that's exactly right.
Anyway, Stephen, we all make mistakes. All of us, and I made a mistake yesterday. Perhaps I could turn to that mistake.
I just looked up North Korea in 1950, Rodney. The country lost 30% of its population. 30% of its population. America now has over 300 million people. Again, that's roughly 100 million Americans if the same calamity struck America. I mean, that is beyond imagination, but yet that country went through it, and I'm sure they teach it to kids in school. They know it. And North Korea, I think as a percent, it's military size, manpower-wise, as a percent of population, is the largest in the world. If I remember the number I saw, I think it was somewhere on the order of 9 million, either active or in reserve or something. I mean, North Korea realizes that they could literally get involved in another war again. They also realize that if it happened, they'd be decimated even worse to what happened last time. So despite the heated rhetoric, they absolutely don't want war. But my goodness, the possibility is real, and hopefully cooler heads will prevent it from happening.
Yes, but just one quick point there, Stephen, which is, it's not just a question of the North Koreans being wiped out. The border is only about 20 miles or so, depending on how you define the environs of the capital of South Korea, which is Seoul. And North Korea, whatever happens in respect of North Korea, Seoul will be wiped out. Everybody knows this. They've got the artillery and whatever, and it's all inside caves inside the mountainside. So whatever happens, Seoul gets wiped out. Now, one can't, any decent, responsible person, say that I want to condone any circumstances in which a whole capital is wiped out. But the USA seems to want that. And it says, oh, yes, North Korea tries it on with us, we'll wipe out North Korea, and forgets that its own side will be wiped out as well. I mean, this is a grossly and grotesquely irresponsible attitude. Policy, and one must think broader than just North Korea, and one must look at the eventual unification. And why be, I mean, What is the problem? If the South Koreans really do have a more successful society, which is attractive to other people, then the quicker they give that peace treaty and open up the commercial and political and the tourist links, the better, because in no time at all, if South Korea has a worthwhile society, it will win the argument. I do not see why the Americans failed to give the peace treaty when that would in fact open the way to a fast settlement on the peninsula.
Well, I think the issue, Rodney, is the same one I repeat so often in my writing, that America needs enemies. And if enemies, if any one enemy or any numbers of them didn't exist, they'd be created. So we have an Iranian enemy. Of course, we've got a Syrian enemy, a Libyan enemy, Afghanistan, Iraq, North Korea.
Yes.
North Korea, Iran, and Iraq, George Bush's Axis of Evil. I think it was his 2002 State of the Union address. Iraq, of course, the Iraq of pre-2003 no longer exists. So we have two charter members remaining. I mean, this goes on and on. I also call North Korea a punching bag because the real targets, America's real targets globally, are China and Russia. They're both powerhouses. China, an economic and military powerhouse, and Russia, absolutely a military powerhouse. And it's projected in the years ahead, another couple of decades, to be a major world economic power. It's got a long ways to go. It was decimated after the Soviet Union broke up. It's come back very slowly. It's done most of the comeback since in the new millennium, but still very slowly. But give it another two decades, maybe three, it'll be one of the world's economic powerhouses, and it certainly has a nuclear arsenal that can match America's with delivery systems that can hit any spot on the globe accurately. So America doesn't want challenges. It certainly doesn't want challengers that can affect its dominance, but that's exactly what's happening. Russia and China are rising. America is declining. Everything America does is to prevent that, Rodney, but it seems the policies America adopts is digging a bigger hole. And as Paul Craig Roberts says, America is still very much a military power, but America is heading for third world status.
Well, yes, it will go to third world status because at some point the dollar will crack. As you know, all the agreements are being now made throughout the world, regional agreements, not to trade in the dollar. That has led to attacks on Iraq and Libya, and it is a major factor on making a punch bag of Iran. But the reality is when the dollar is no longer used as a reserve currency, American power will evaporate. And trouble with that, the position is that the USA doesn't see that it is happening. It's intent upon a military confrontation with China, because that is what he's building over those little islands, which are only sort of bare rocks, which are claimed by Japan and by the Chinese. But the Americans seem to be shifting their military aggressions possibly away from the Middle East and certainly towards the Pacific. And this is with their major trading partner, a partner which seems to be owning all the gold, and which certainly owns a large proportion of American treasury bonds. The Americans are behaving in a very, very stupid way. They think they can go on bullying people forever, but I'm afraid that they're going to come up against the Chinese and the Russians, and as you quite rightly say, neither side can afford a nuclear war. But they're going to take on the Chinese, and the Chinese will be on in their own territory, and I think that will happen and coincide with a collapse of the dollar. The Americans are being very, very silly. They're refusing to acknowledge what is happening in the world economy, which is happening with political power shifting away from America, and a moral authority has gone as well. Now, Stephen, we have to say that the Koreans are, on the face of it, being a little bit wild and behaving badly. And I want to say that yesterday I behaved badly as well. Perhaps I can tell you about it.
Oh, indeed. Please do.
All right. Well, now, it was a straightforward program. There were three of us and a host, 1 hour, and it was a television discussion on what you mentioned in your introduction, Almaty, which is the big city in Kazakhstan, where the P5 plus one meeting was going on. And you notice I didn't say negotiation, I said meeting. Because, you see, that was what led me, finally, I was fed up to hear with it, to break out in a rage. And I started shouting and waving my arms. This was the end of the program. And the reason was this, that the other three members of the program were eminently sane and reasonable people. And they kept referring to the negotiations going on in Almaty. And I finally started screaming and saying, but look, there were and are no negotiations. What you've got up is a bully boy set up determined to crush Iran if it can. Since 1953, when your country and my country overthrew democracy, they've been opposed to democracy. For 8 years, 1980 to 88, in which there were 1 million people killed, and 100,000 of those, this is on the Iranian side, were killed by chemical gases. And who supplied them with the elements for the chemical gas? Well, I believe it was the USA, Germany, and the UK. And then there was since then there have been all the sanctions, and they've got nothing to do then with a civilian nuclear program or an alleged atomic bomb. It's all about wanting an enemy, resenting anybody who is independent and anybody who wants to do things in their own way. And to talk about negotiations when you've got this complete massive raft of sanctions, and you've got them against the country where there is not a jot of evidence. All 16 American intelligence agencies say they're not creating a bomb. The IAEA says this. And we have people daring to talk about a negotiation when it's really what might be termed a strangling opportunity, except that the Iranians are going to resist. So I flew at them, Stephen. Absolutely fluent. A negotiation is in which both parties have an interest in a reasonable outcome. Both parties push their position, but they act in good faith with the intention of getting an agreement. In what was going on there, whatever Iran can concede, and there's no much more that it can concede, it will lead to another demand from the USA, controlled by Israel, and then to another demand. Because, you see, the object of the USA is to force regime change and to colonialize the country in exactly the same way as they tried to colonialize Iraq with the 100 Bremer orders. But in a rage, the Iraqis have thrown out the Americans, and you can be sure that if ever there was a defensive position to be taken, it will be taken by the Iranians, and that they would be taken against the USA and anybody who attacks them, and it will be taken against anybody who aids the attack. But this, of course, is the USA eternally aggressive, eternally unable to accept that anybody wants to have an independent existence, and always, always controlled by Israel. And finally, Stephen, I ranted. I said, call this a negotiation. It's an attempt essentially to obliterate the political and social structures of a country. It is an attempt to colonialize. It's an attempt to set off war if they can, because they think they can win it. And above all, it is the last stages of an arrogant, paranoid, whining Zionism, which is behind this, which is doing it for its own purposes, which could put the Middle East into nuclear war. And why is it in these so-called negotiations, Stephen, that no one ever mentions that the fact that nobody puts Israel under inspection? And they say, oh, but Israel has not signed the non-proliferation treaty. The USA, if it had the slightest bit of guts, it would just simply say to Israel, we'll stop all money for you, we will put sanctions on you, and we're going to track and trail all your dolphin submarines. And if you don't settle on the 1967 borders in Palestine, we will force you to settle. But you see, the USA, a creepy, crawly, Zionist-controlled society, exactly the same as the UK is, has got no intention of settling anything in the Middle East. It's a warmonger. It wants continuous war. It wants a Zionist state which goes from Lebanon right the way down through Sinai and right across to the river Euphrates. And it wants to destroy the one country which has got a desire to do things independently and which has not got an atomic bomb. So please, I said to these three very eminently reasonable people, don't talk to me about a negotiation. It's a group of billy boys who are setting up a strangling opportunity. And by the way, Stephen, I was very angry about the Russians and the Chinese. They're playing a sort of long-term game. They recognize the economic power is shifting. They recognize the political power is shifting. And they're probably saying, well, in the meanwhile, we don't really worry what happens here and what happens there. But they've got to understand that if Iran goes down, then the next one to be surrounded with bases in the West are Russia and China. And I do think that Russia and China ought to wake up and have some guts and to stand up and, frankly, to split open the P5+1 and say exactly what they are. They've become a tool for Zionist policy. Anyway, Stephen, that's enough from me. Right. I ranted and raved, and I did wave my arms. And of course, on television, all that comes across as looking rather unfortunate.
Rodney, all I can say to you is bravo, bravo. I wish Russia and China really would do that. They understand full well that they are the ultimate targets. The only red line stops with them. They are America's final frontier. They realize that if America could get rid of the weaker rivals, then they're the two that are remaining. I don't think America wants a war with either of them. I think it would prefer to weaken them, challenge them, co-opt them in other ways. But America is very nefarious in many ways, and they better do something to defend themselves. The only one with backbone enough to stand up and really say things at times that really goes right in America's face is Vladimir Putin. He did it. He did it really, dare I say, heroically, at a Munich conference in 2006. There were U.S. officials in the audience, or at least one, maybe more than one, and they were shocked with his straightforwardness. I quoted him. It's been a good while, and I don't have it in front of me, but he said some very, very straightforward things about America's aims in wanting a unipolar world, and Russia absolutely wanted none of it, wouldn't put up with it, would defend its own interests. He denounced the Libya war. He denounced the Iraq war. I mean, here's a guy, he may not be running the country as perfectly as some would like, but when it comes to foreign policy, he's the only one I know, and why he didn't do this with the P5, he'll have to answer for it, but he's the only one who has stood up and confronted America politely, but very straightforwardly, not mincing any words. I wish you'd do it now. Yeah, I agree. There were no negotiations. I've written about all of these so-called Iranian negotiations. P5+1, they're called. The five permanent members of the Security Council, plus Germany, and Russia and China are two of the members. They have a lot to say. They're two of the five. They could speak out very forcefully. So there are no negotiations. Iran is bullied. It complies with nuclear non-proliferation treaty provisions. It's doing nothing different in its nuclear program than every other country with commercial operations. U.S. intelligence, 16 U.S. intelligence agencies do an annual assessment of Iran. One of the things they look at is its potential nuclear threat. Every single year, the latest I remember was March last year. I may have missed a new one last month, but at least through March last year, and I'm sure nothing changed or it would have made blazing headlines, the assessment was there is no evidence whatsoever that Iran has a nuclear weapons development program. There's a tagline that says, we don't know that Iran isn't doing it. We just can't find any evidence to prove it is doing it. These are 16 U.S. intelligence agencies. Well, the bottom line is in. Iran has none. It's operating legitimately. The only illegitimate regional nuclear power is Israel. It's an open secret. It didn't sign the NPT treaty. I'll be redundant there. But Israel is nuclear armed and dangerous. Everybody knows it. Even Israel has hinted at that before. We need to take a break, but Iran threatens nobody. They're putting up with these talks. Again, they're not negotiations. No nuance with schedule. Probably there will be some. I don't think anybody wants a war at this point. I don't think Israel wants a war at this point. They bluster about it, but I don't think they really want a war now. Certainly not unless America is involved. We'll get back to this and other things on Rodney's mind. Let's take a short break. On with Rodney Shakespeare. Rodney, there's so much going on, and it's hard to find very much that's encouraging. There's a dismal economic situation in America and across Europe. I wrote about the Cyprus situation. I lost count of how many articles I wrote about Cyprus. I think it was 7, 8, or 9, and it really is shocking for people to understand just what's going on there. The idea that so-called safe bank accounts no longer are safe, where the Cyprus model, the Cypriot model, is a model that will be replicated in Europe. It's already been brought up and I believe passed in the European Parliament. call it affecting Eurozone countries. The idea that to bail out troubled economies, ordinary people's bank accounts can be looted. Well, so far the Cypriot model means anybody with over 100,000 euros stands to lose over half their wealth. Some people may lose everything, but if people think that their insured deposits under 100,000 euros are insured deposits in America, they currently stand at $250,000. If anybody thinks that money is safe, think again. The original Cyprus proposal was to tax the big depositors a higher percentage. The original number was 9.9%, and to hit the small depositors, 6.7%. A revised proposal took it down to 4.4%, I believe. Then it was revised again, taken off, and only hit the large depositors over 100,000 euros. But the key is this. If enough money can't be raised, everybody is vulnerable. Every account can be tapped to any amount. They can confiscate it all. And people don't realize in America, Rodney, that when you put your money in the bank, it's the bank's money. It's not yours. I was shocked to learn that. Ellen Brown, who's a regular on this program, wrote about it, and I quoted her in one of my articles. Literally, you make a bank deposit in a checking account, in a savings account, in a money market account, it's no longer your money. Officially, legally, it belongs to an American bank that you put your money in, and you get in return an IOU. That's the way the law reads, a promise to pay. So if the bank goes belly up, you lose your money. The bank has no obligation to repay you. Will FDIC in America repay you? Well, J.P. Morgan Chase has something on the order of $1 trillion in assets. The FDIC has a tiny fraction of that amount it's able to use to bail out depositors. If J.P. Morgan Chase goes belly up, sorry, J.P. Morgan Chase depositors lose it all. They won't get a nickel back. I don't know what the law is in Britain, Rodney, but it is pretty, pretty disturbing over here.
Okay. Well, now, just before the break, you referred to Vladimir Putin, and he is very accurately condemning the Cyprus situation. Vladimir Putin finally realized what the West was up to in 2008, of course, when Georgia attacked South Ossetia, and NATO was revealed as an international aggressive organization, nothing to do with the North Atlantic. But Putin now is homing in on the great weakness of the West, as revealed by the Cyprus situation. First of all, a series of common law cases, which seem to be virtually common to the USA and the UK, long ago established that the when you put your money in a bank in the collapse, it is in fact essentially owned legally by the bank. They seem to have a sort of an equitable obligation to sort of hand the money back, but the bottom line is you end up as a down the list of creditors in the crunch. The next thing is that stemming from a committee of the Bank of International Settlements, and at this point I start shivering or shuddering, because the head of the committee is a man called Mark Carney, and goodness me, who is going to become the new governor of the Bank of England? Well, Mark Carney, out of the Bank of International Settlements on Goldman Sachs, he is the one who has been pointing out what the law is and then saying, and this must be the agreed policy to solve this. As a result, you have just over 1 year ago, just 13 months, I think, New Zealand saying, yes, that in a crash that comes, we can take depositors. There was this paper, a sort of joint paper from the USA Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and I think somebody in the Bank of England, saying, yes, you can do this. Effectively, your deposits insurance has gone out the window. And the position in the UK is not quite clear, but with Mark Carney there, you can be sure that any deposits here have gone out the window. And there is a similar position now being taken by Australia and Canada. And you don't need to know any more. If that lot are saying your deposits, then your deposits have gone. There are two aspects of it. The first is that they are now saying, and you can challenge if you want to, Stephen, and I can challenge, but I haven't got the money to challenge. It would take years, and in any case, you can guarantee the result would be upholding the legal the stream of cases that the bank owns, and they can do what they like. But what about insurance? Well, insurance is okay, so you've lost your money, but okay, somebody's going to come along and reimburse you. But you were putting your finger on it with the the facts that you mentioned just now. They started by taking nearly 10% of those of under 100,000, and then only rage. Nothing to do with guarantees or insurance. Straight, simple rage. I will call it pitchfork rage, and you understand what I mean by that. Stop them taking the money of the people under 100,000. These are dollars. It'd be £80,000. It's not a large sum. And as for those who are 81,000, Stephen, it's not clear, but they may lose up to 100%. Because, you see, A, there is a percentage which goes out immediately. Secondly, there is another percentage which gets turned into worthless shares. And then there is the situation as what happens when they take off the capital controls and they find there is a complete and absolute run on the Cyprus banks, which is what Vladimir Putin...
Oh, dear. I think we got cut off. Oh, if we do, we'll get Rodney back on the phone again. Yeah, I certainly agree. What is it, Mark Carney, former Bank of Canada, central banker, in July, I believe, he will become head of the Bank of England. Mervyn King, I guess, is retiring, and Mark Carney will replace him. Oh, they pick good ones. Somebody, Goldman Sachs and the rest of it, you know, going in to do what the other bankers do. You know, rob the little people and make rich ones richer. That's the dirty game. So whether you loot bank accounts or whether you get it any other way, you know, the big Goldman Sachs, I've written a couple of times about them. I wrote about them in both of my books, How Wall Street Fleeces America, and A Banker Occupation, and I think Goldman Sachs is a metaphor for everything wrong with predatory banking. Rodney, are you back on again? Let's see if we can get Rodney back on the phone again. Oh, if he's on, I can't hear him. Well, that's a dirty game. You make money by stealing it, and you steal it from ordinary people. You steal it from investors. You loot bank accounts now. Canada passed a law that bank accounts can be looted. That's not the word they used. They're very discreet in the language they use, but it comes down to looting bank accounts if they want to bail out their economy or bail out the nation's big banks. There was a stat quoted verbatim from the law that Canada passed. The big banks are too important to fail, so you got to save them. Well, the real truth is the big banks are too important to let keep operating. You ought to shut them down if they're insolvent. If they're troubled, they're on their own to get out of it, to make ordinary people pay for their transgressions, and that's why they get into trouble. They use their money to speculate. They get bailouts. They don't use the money to put it into the economy. I've used the line, and others have used the line similar to it, that central bankers in the West, Bernanke in America, the ECB, Canada Central Bank, Bank of Japan. I put out a new article in the Bank of Japan today. They're going to double down on Bernanke's quantitative easing. Japan was doing quantitative easing to the extent of 20% of the Japanese economy. Bernanke's doing it to the extent of something like 17% of the U.S. economy. Well, Japan plans to ratchet it up to something like 40% of the Japanese economy. Well, I quoted from a 1988 Federal Reserve position paper by two Fed economists who said, in so many words, QE does not work. Well, the truth is it could work. If you create money and put it into the economy, a growth could be created, jobs could be created, but when you give it to bankers, they stash it away on their balance sheet, they use it for big salaries, big bonuses, speculation, buying out competitors. That's exactly what's gone on since the Fed started bailing out Wall Street. Of course, Wall Street owns the Fed. So the Fed, Bernanke, is just a hired hand. He does what he's told. He takes orders from Wall Street CEOs. That's his job.
Yes.
He knows what it is. So he's been bailing them out. They've made money hand over fist. The economy is extremely weak. Half or more of U.S. households are either impoverished or bordering on it. That comes from U.S. Census data, and it's not getting better. It's getting worse. And now you want to hit people when they're down. You want to, I don't know what these people have in the bank, but whatever they have, maybe they have direct deposits on their paychecks, on their Social Security checks. I mean, that literally could be absconded with by criminal bankers. Rodney, I guess you're back on now.
I am back, Stephen. And just before I was cut off, I was pointing out that what had happened was they had destroyed all confidence in the situation, and the moment that in Cyprus that they actually release the controls, there will be a complete rush to remove any money which is left. And in the case of those who had more than, 100,000 euros in the bank, they may well be losing the whole lot. And I just want to think for a moment on who those people were. Apparently, only a tiny handful of people were these allegedly Russian money launderers and crooks. Most of those big sums are small businesses. Now, if they are, say, just over the 100,000, whatever the limit is, then they immediately could lose the whole of that money. And any small business could easily have 100,000, 200,000, 300,000, 400,000. It has ups and down flows in its accounts. It has to have money for salaries. It has to have money to supply suppliers. So you're going to see all the money being pulled out. You're going to see a collapse of businesses. And what about the large businesses? They could lose, all be wiped out as well. They'll be back to barter in no time at all. And this is why, Stephen, they've not actually opened the banks at this moment. I don't think they can. Putin got it right. Once you say, oh, we can take your money, confidence collapses, and confidence is basically the essence of an economy. So that's going to spread. I'm surprised it hasn't spread right the way through Europe at this moment. I think people are so shocked by what happened, that they could not only just take the money, but that the insurance guarantees are out the window. And the insurance guarantees are now out the window for the UK, for France, Spain, Portugal, and the USA. Why is anybody keeping their money in the bank? I suppose the answer is that you've got to keep it somewhere. And there are the facilities of a bank by which you can normally pay bills and all the rest of it. But I can't think of any other reason why people are now keeping their money in the bank. It's much too dangerous. Putin is right. The way has been open. The way's been open to a collapse of the Western economy, and that's little Cyprus. What do you think is going to happen when Spain gets going again, and the Greece, they have more rioting? The euro is going to collapse, Stephen, and it's now a question as to whether the whole of the European economy collapses. I can't speak really, I suppose, for the USA, but they've destroyed confidence in the system. Nobody's got any reason to leave any sum in the banks, and if they remove their money, that in itself is going to wreck what is left of a very weakening, declining European economy.
Yeah, so true, Rodney. Absolutely true. It's an abysmal situation. I think the reason people leave money in the bank is they don't know where else to put it, but they don't know these things. The average person simply does not know what's going on in Cyprus. And if you mention Cyprus to somebody on the street in downtown Chicago, many people, possibly most, might not even realize that Cyprus is a country, let alone part of the Eurozone, let alone in deep trouble, and the country literally has been destroyed by what has happened to it. A lot more is going on in Cyprus. Force-fed austerity is getting worse. That will make stealing from people's bank accounts much, much worse. There'll be mass layoffs. People will lose their jobs. The main industry in Cyprus is the financial sector.
It was the financial sector.
Yeah, financial services. I mean, Cyprus is a quasi-tax haven. It's not completely tax-free, but it's one of those places people put money in because they can either avoid taxes or pay a lot less of them. So there's lots and lots of money in Cyprus. Now, Inside has got inside information, and they pulled millions of euros out in advance of what happened last month.
Yes.
Huge amounts came out. I mean, they got tipped off. 132 companies got tipped off. A company affiliated with the president of the country got tipped off. I think the owner is the husband of the president's daughter. So they got tipped off, and they pulled their money out safely, took it to another offshore tax haven. And this is the way the dirty game works. But ordinary people didn't know. So now you've got all this stuff coming down on them. The economy literally is going into a deep, not just a depression, but a very deep depression. It'll be protracted. Who knows how much of the economy will go down? I saw numbers 20%. It could be 30%. I mean, this is absolute disaster, Rodney.
I don't think you're looking at 20. It can't be. They're just in a state of shock, and the political consequences haven't even struck when they realize is that those in the know pulled the money out beforehand, as they did. There's about 150 of them. I think they've got the names of them. But when they realize is that they can't transact. And if they've got any money to transact, it's either half of it's gone or it's about to go. And they cannot lift those controls. The whole thing is frozen, and they don't lift the controls. And when they do, the whole thing collapses, and it can't be 20 or 30. And I don't see how it can stay in the euro. And there's one other problem, Stephen, which is you can't look at Cyprus as a country. You can only look at Cyprus as a member of the euro. And part of the euro has gone down the tube. And the governments have then stated, and yes, we are going to remove confidence from the rest of the system. It's not they're going to. They've actually done it. I just think we're in a sort of, I don't know what a boring metaphor, but the quiet before the storm as the euro goes down. You cannot have Portugal, Spain, Italy, Ireland, Greece and France carrying on as they are in a deteriorating situation and then remove any confidence from the banking system and think there aren't going to be any consequences. You're going to find something else happens very sharply. I mean, Slovenia is could well be the next thing next week. But we're in a state of shock here, Stephen, and that's why things are not moving as you would expect. Now, as I got back onto the telephone, I heard you mentioning the extraordinary sums of money which the USA, $85 billion, is putting out into the American economy, and the Japanese are doing roughly the equivalent in terms of their population. Now, in both cases, the money is only going into the banks and is not going to spread out into the economy, and they are building, it's not going to solve anything, and they are building a colossal hyperinflation at some point in the future. That money at some point gets out into the economy, and because it's all in the wrong places and they're not addressing the spreading of the real economy to everybody, you're going to get a hyperinflation. You're going to get some, this is when you've still got productive capacity, you've still got farms, you've still got factories, you've got still got people to work, you've still got minerals that you can buy, and you've still got fuel that you can buy. And all this is going to lead to a massive collapse and an immediate imposition of fascism. Well, we've gone back to this before, Stephen, but look, this is looking us in the face in Europe now, and it comes about because we've destroyed all confidence, not only in our financial system, but all confidence in those who are supposed to be governing us. I mean, they've just turned around and just said, if we want to, we can betray you, and we are going to do it. That's the situation in Europe, Stephen.
That's the bottom line, Rodney. It really is so, and it's happening across Europe. Most of the Eastern European countries, leave Russia out of it. It has its own system. Its economy isn't in the shape that the former republics are in, or at least the Eastern European ones. Poland, so many. You mentioned Slovenia, Slovakia. I mean, one after another, lots of troubled economies, and the Western European countries, every single one of them, some are in better shape than others. Germany is in better shape than the so-called pigs countries, but they're all troubled, and the euro is a disaster waiting to happen. Sooner or later, the euro will come apart. That was the prediction of the world's leading euro expert. I wrote about him. Yes. I mentioned him on this program, Bernard Connolly, and it's just a matter of when it's going to happen. But the euro is a terrible construct. You simply can't package an economic powerhouse like Germany in the same system with economic basket cases like Greece and Cyprus. Yes. And Portugal, even Italy, the third largest European economy.
Yeah.
This thing doesn't work. So you get that situation. America is troubled. And if these economies go down, it affects the entire world. And America's economy is very, very fragile. If you have half the households in America either in poverty or bordering on it, that is the definition of a sick economy.
Yes. Now, Stephen, just time is moving, and if I may, I'd just like to move on to the sad death of a magnificent leader in Venezuela and of those malicious forces who think that there is a case for altering the critical settlement, which I think has happened in Venezuela. Put in simple terms, a narrow, corrupt elite controlling all the media in Venezuela, and they still control that media, even though there's been 10 years of Hugo Chavez. The Americans and the British are now daring to try to put the clock back. And I wish to point out that in putting the clock back or wanting to do that, they're not seeing what is going on in the rest of the world. It is not that the rest of the world necessarily has good solutions, but there is more information around, and the fairer deal for the mass of the population is going on right the way round, and at your peril, in the long run, you try and overthrow that, as is happening with the Americans putting in CIA and the usual goons to try and overthrow what is a settlement in Venezuela. It's going against
indeed.
The tide of history. That's
indeed.
What annoys me, Stephen.
We are out of time. I wish we could continue.
Yes.
There's a big election coming up on April 14th in Venezuela. I'll certainly cover it. I'll certainly write about it. I have a new article in Venezuela. I won't get it out tomorrow. I have other things that are more time-sensitive I want to get out. But mid-April, Sunday, a week from tomorrow, Venezuelan election. Chavismo will be reelected. There's no question about that. But the dark forces never quit. Rodney, many, many thanks. I'll just remind my listeners to tune in again tomorrow. Same time, 1 p.m. Eastern time on weekends, 11 a.m. on Fridays. Make it a regular habit.